You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, new day, new room, still a little bit green in here, David Goss. What's up, man? Armchair analyst. He's just swimming up the walk-up bars. I guess it's not a walk-up bar if you swim up to it. He's still in Mexico.
Yeah, well, that guy's on vacation for the next 17 years. Mentally, he's been checked out for a while.
Why 17 years? I'm not picking up what you're putting down there with the time frame.
Oh, I just always say random things.
Oh, okay. You just throw numbers in there?
I don't know. Maybe that's biblical. I don't know.
17 years of famine? It's not famine.
Joseph saw that Doyle would have 17
years of
margaritas.
Is Doyle wearing a Technicolor dream coat Mexico, do you think?
Watch out, because I'm going to start singing.
Maybe that's his back. With like different variations of like
sunburn?
SPF on it. Yeah, I don't know.
And it was red and orange and violet,
possibly
and
on fire.
Burnt.
Yeah, look, we miss him, but it's okay. We'll survive. A big show for you here on this Tuesday, because of course Monday was President's Day, so we were all off enjoying our very little free time that we have until MLS starts here. CCL fever is today. It's back. I've got like back of my hand on the forehead. I'm like, it's a 102. I think if we get a semifinal or even a final team, we're going to start climbing into really dangerous territory there.
See, this is why I don't respect you, Wiebe.
Wait, I thought you respected me. This is
This is new. I've lost respect for you.
Okay.
You can't just show up in the semifinals.
I'm not showing up. I still have a fever. It's still 102.
You're like an MLS team with U.S. Open Cup, which is like, well, pay attention if we make it to the semis. You got to care from the group stage.
I mean, I care. 102 is
still
potentially dangerous. I'm going to the doctor for it, okay? Look, the doctor, I guess we could call Caleb Porter a doctor. He's going to be our guest here on today's show. We'll talk to him a little bit about CCL, but more importantly, about tactics in MLS. We thought he was the perfect coach to jump on here and give us a little bit of a primer when it comes to the X's and O's in this league and with the Timbers, because they've been doing some big moves this offseason. Sebastian Blanco in, retooling that midfield. A lot to talk about with him. That'll come in the second segment. We're going to talk about news. There's a new TAM player in Toronto. We're not sure how they're fitting him in under that salary cap, but they've done it. Victor Vasquez, a Spaniard, 30 years old, comes from Liga MX. We'll talk about how he changes their team. There's a right back for the Red Bulls. Of course, they're in CCL fever, so we'll jump on that. The hype train or the hype wagon, whatever Tommy Thompson's riding on, got a little backheel addition to it this weekend. We'll talk that as well. And we'll jump into the mailbag and talk a little bit about Minnesota United. I was in Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, really. I was in St. Paul as well this weekend, so I saw a little bit on the ground. We'll talk about that and some fans checking in from around the globe. But first, some housekeeping here. Right now, sit down, calm yourself. We have fewer fantasy players in our league than the Twim League this week in MLS and the Octagon. Right now, Extreme Radio has fewer people in the league. I'm upset. I can't help but be upset.
It's like we're throwing a party and no one's coming.
Right. You put out the invitations, you mix the punch, you bake some cookies, and it's just sitting there at the end of the night, and you maybe cry yourself to sleep. Let's not let that happen here. The code 12-308. I repeat, the code 12-308. We are working on getting you swag. We're working on perhaps some MLS Live subscriptions. We know you want that. So sign up and play with us, and we'll get that really going as the league starts. Remember, week one is that opening weekend challenge, a bunch of prizes up for grabs, and then things start in earnest in week two. So you got a little bit of time, but there's no time to waste. Get in there and create your team. Also, the schedule coming up on Extra Time Radio, if you're MLS and soccer fiends out there this Thursday, we're going to talk to a bunch of supporters around the league in Atlanta, in Minnesota. Mark Fishkin will join us. He'll talk about what it's like to be a fan from 96 to present, an OG for sure. And we're trying to get some Portland Timbers folks on the phone to do some TIFO talk. So we'll keep you updated on that. That's coming Thursday. And then next week before opening day, 5 shows. 5 shows. We start with Eastern Conference Preview on Monday, Tuesday, how to follow MLS in 2017. So we'll talk MLS Live, MLS Fantasy. We'll talk to John Strong about MLS broadcasting. Wednesday, our referee show. That's kind of an annual tradition at this point. Thursday, you know where we're going, Western Conference. We're going to preview out there. And then Friday, and this is where you come in, that's our prediction show. That's where we make all manner of straightforward predictions, Golden Boot, MLS Cup, playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And I try my very, very best to avoid another embarrassing prediction.
Don't
like
question
the Wando.
Wando's ability.
I will never
this
do
season.
That again. But if you have over-unders, if you have predictions, if you have topics for us, if you want us to make a prediction around a certain thing, hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. We want to hear that. You can hit us on Holler here as well. It'll all be a good time. With,
last thing
yeah, go for
added
it.
To all of this is
there are a lot of things there.
We mentioned the fan show on Thursday. We got great stories of fans. Experience soccer abroad for this show. If you know anyone that you think should be highlighted, send it to us because we'd love to get more people on the phone. We'd love to read some stories if we can. So
yeah.
This is your episode. If you know someone in your supporters group, in your soccer community, a youth coach that you grew up under who's a crazy fan, some story, feel free to send it to us because we're always looking for
yeah.
that.
Tell us how you experienced this league because ultimately I think that's why we're all here, right? That's why we're sitting here talking. That's why you're listening or spacing out or whatever you do. We love MLS. We love following MLS. We love supporting MLS. So we want to hear how you do it and why you do it. Let's jump into CCL Fever, the first games in earnest of 2017. Like preseason kind of counts, but I don't really I don't think it really counts. Wednesday. Game 1, Red Bulls hosting the Vancouver Whitecaps, an all-MLS affair. You can watch this one on UDN. It's at 8 p.m. Eastern. Then on Thursday, FC Dallas hosts Arabe Unido, the Panamanians, coming to Frisco there. That one's on UDN as well. It's also at 8 p.m. Eastern. Watch both of those. The coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. Before we get into the matchups, before we get into the big picture here as to who is going to try to advance and who has the best chance of finally capturing that elusive title, for MLS, for their club, for just about everything here, because it has not been a successful venture for MLS clubs, at least on the top end of CCL. Dave, tell people what CCL Fever is all about for you. Why do you love this?
So when I became a fan at first as a young player, or as a young person.
Yes, as a young player.
So I never really picked a team, but I liked rooting for MLS against everyone. And, like, it made it very easy. I have a vivid memory of Pat Onstead getting a red card and Zach Wells coming off the bench at Punta Neras in Costa Rica during a day Ooh. Game because they didn't have lights and making the save.
This is good CCL.
Yeah.
Baby.
Well, I think at the time it was the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Was that what they called it before?
Good question. It's gone through iterations. I believe that's what its name was at the time.
So I have those vivid memories, but I enjoyed watching that. I like watching soccer from different cultures and different backgrounds, different styles. So that part's always fun. The insanity is always there, and just the you don't know what you're going
to
get.
Unpredictability to an extreme. I mean, we last year, I believe we saw people throwing shoes at players on the field in Costa Rica, which was pretty ridiculous. I mean, I remember being at a CCL game in Houston, and I was there to cover something else, and it was kind of into the season. I don't think the Dynamo were really about it, and Dom Kinnear got chucked, and he goes off the field, and he's basically riling up the crowd, and after the game, he's just furious because of the diving and the play acting, and this is just part of it. And this is when we came up with CONCACAF camp. This was in large reason why, because we wanted MLS teams to figure out how to give a little bit of what they were taking, so to speak, which is not to say that they bend the rules of the game and do something ethically or morally unsound. It's just gamesmanship.
Right.
When you're in CONCACAF, you've got to recognize that the game changes a little bit, that the refereeing changes a little bit, that the opponent changes a little bit, and it's fascinating. And I'm with you on the cultural side, which is part of me was sad to see MLS teams group stage go away in these next editions because you're missing out on those trips to Trinidad and Tobago. You're missing out on those trips to to Belize maybe even. All these places where the field is bad, the referees are a question mark, the other team's quality is a question mark, and yet somehow the games end up being these extremely entertaining, like Shakespearean plays.
But you also learn about things, and like this is getting straight into my nerditude, but FC Dallas is going to play Arabe Unido. The reason that's their name is because Colón, on the east side of Panama, because Panama City is on the west side where the other side of the canal is, has a large population of immigrants from the Middle East. And that's why that's their team name. that's something you learn that you're not going to learn. I mean, we already know these things about the Vancouver Whitecaps and the New York Red Bulls. You're not learning about those teams. These other teams pop up, and you get to learn something about a new place and a connection with a new group of people. It's also – then the last part of it is I like to watch Liga MX. I like to watch the U.S. national team and the Mexican national team, and it's another stage for that battle. And I do agree fully that MLS teams have to prove themselves against Liga MX teams. And I think that that's still a part of what MLS is growing to. And so that opportunity to see them face off and to see what level you're at and where you're at, I think still has value. And it's just exciting.
Yeah, we've heard many times here Commissioner Don Garber say that, you know, we are ultimately competing with Liga MX. We're ultimately competing to be the best team in the CONCACAF region in the Americas, and you've got to beat them in head-to-head competition. And that head-to-head competition can't be friendlies. Let's be honest. It's got to be where the stakes are big, and in this case, the Club World Cup, those are big stakes. And a championship on the regional side, those are big stakes. And if you haven't won it, the stakes get even bigger.
But one of the things that's happened recently – I'd say one of the things that's happened since RSL was in the final is that Liga MX teams have taken this more seriously.
Yeah.
And it's no longer that the Club World Cup. It used to just be a chance to get into the Club World Cup.
And now you would kind of see, if you were making fun of me about my 102 fever to 104, Mexican teams didn't have a fever until second leg of the semis finals.
Until Hercules Gomez would thrash MLS teams in the second leg because he could. Now they want to win this title because they want the trophy and they want to be regional champions. And so that gives more onus on this, which means that MLS teams have more to play for because being CONCACAF champions is something. It's not just, we want a chance to face off against a South American, African, or European team.
Yep. Look, they've got a chance here to play some Mexican teams in the semifinals should they move on. Of course, one MLS team will move on. No doubt about that. The Red Bulls and Vancouver Whitecaps going head-to-head, so one will get through. They will face the winner of Tigres Pumas, which that's not going to be easy, but that's kind of the charm of this thing. You don't get there. It's not a it's not a parade on rose petals. You got to fight your way through. Dallas taking on Arabe Unido, who are very good, have produced a lot of MLS talent in recent years. Pachuca and Saprissa are on the other side in that side of the bracket. So Costa Rican power or another Liga MX power. So if they get through, which I think they believe they will, and they've been prepping to do so, they will have a tough game on the other side.
One of the positives about the readjustment that we're going to see is Saprissa did so well to get to this stage and then sold a ton of players in this break.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to see the same team have a chance, the same squad have a chance to have some continuity. So when you don't break up the tournament, you have that chance.
That goes for MLS sides as well. We'll see what happens in the future years. But right now it is the 2016-2017 version of the CONCACAF Champions League. Let's take a look at these matchups here. As I said, the Red Bulls and Vancouver Whitecaps on Wednesday. You can watch on UDN, 8 p.m. Eastern. Vancouver, little bit of walking wounded right now. We've got, Jordi Reyna is not going to make this trip. He's apparently in a boot and on crutches up there in Vancouver. And Carl Robinson is saying he's going to be out for a couple weeks at least. Nicholas Mosquito will not make the trip. Christian Bolaños will not make the trip. Freddy Montero, their new DP, will not make this trip. That's a good bit of attacking talent that will not be on the plane to head for the Red Bull Arena. Of course, it's an away game, so you're just looking for away goals, really looking for a result here if you're Robinson and the boys. On the other side, the Red Bulls, of course, lost Dax McCarty, but they have faith in Sean Davis. Tyler Adams,
Adams,
he's with the U-20s.
He's also injured.
He came off the field with the U-20s with an injury, and that's a little bit of a
concern. So he's going to miss their game today.
Right.
And he won't be a part of this for sure. And it's a question mark if he's healthy, because that was a player that was supposed to be a part of this.
Yeah, I think the Red Bulls, their big question mark is the back line. Up top, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's probably, as we're seeing, as Doyle has kind of told us over and over, it's that 4-2-2-2. Up top, you're looking at probably Verone and Wright Phillips, Kleschen and Royer, and behind them, Felipe and Davis. And then, Dave, the back line, other than Aurelien Collin, that's a question mark right now. They went out and they made a signing here this last week, and we've been waiting for a signing on their part. They loaned in Panama international Michael Amir Murillo. He's a right back, which makes sense. Chris Duval took off, and they've had some injuries back there. Chris Duval didn't take off. They traded Chris Duval, so that's an important note there. He went to Montreal.
No, he got taken in the expansion draft and then got traded.
Yeah, so
it's MLS,
man.
Oh, man,
there were too many transactions with him there. What's going to happen on the back line? Who does Jesse Marsh play?
In this game?
In this game. Who should he be playing?
I think Kamar Lawrence is back now, so you have him to start at left back. Justin Bilyeu's been starting in preseason because Kamar Lawrence was with the Jamaican national team. Mm-hmm. He's the lockdown starter. He's one of the best left backs in the league, so you're okay there. It seems like Sal Zizzo is probably going to get the job for this, at least the first leg at right back, just because Murillo hasn't been there.
Right, and he's played a good bit for this team.
Jesse Marsh really likes him.
Yeah.
I did a game for Red Bulls at some point when he started, and Jesse Marsh had some stat that they were like undefeated when Sal Zizzo started for them or something like that. So he really likes him. And then right now it looks like Aaron Long and Aurelien Collin are starting at center back. Perrinell is cleared to play, but he hasn't been starting, so you don't know if he has the minutes in him.
Educate people about Shane Long, because I think when
Aaron.
Good Lord, yes, Aaron Long. There's
I can educate
longs.
Them about
there's,
Shane
there's
Long.
There's a lot of longs in world soccer here. Aaron Long, who really thrived last year in the USL team, he currently is loaned, I believe, to the first team, but there are rumors out today that he will be signed to a first-team contract, looking like probably that third, fourth center back competing, depending on who gets in there.
He wasn't a center back. He came out. He played in the Sounders, I believe, Sounders PDL team once he came out of college, Portland Timbers too, and then ended up with Red Bulls too. He's not – so he wasn't a center back originally. They're converting him. So not just is he learning MLS, but he's learning that position. But he was head and shoulders above everyone else in USL for a team that gave up the least amount of goals and won the championship. So not just another team in USL. He was head and shoulders above everyone. He really impressed with the ball at his feet. His communication is phenomenal. He's played left center back. So we'll see where he matches up with Aurelien Collin.
Aurelien Collin, a right-sided center back, no doubt about
right,
that.
Right, so it seems like it's a good match. I don't know that he's a 27-game MLS starter right now. If you're saying, well, Perrinell can play, but he's not always healthy, we need him to start 15, I think it's a risk to take that right now, but he's a talented player, and I know that he fits into that system well, and I know that the Red Bulls front office or front staff, this staff is very enamored with him.
So here's the question for Vancouver. I'm looking at that walking wounded list. And I'm saying, okay, who plays up top? Kakuta Mane is going to run all day. You know that. They'll play to break. I have to imagine Eric Hurtado probably gets into this team at that point. But what, Christian Teixeira on a wing?
Listen, I'm going to this game because I'm going to see Alphonso Davies play.
Yeah.
I think Alphonso Davies could get a start in this one. Carl Robinson, in his pregame comments yesterday, said this is a chance for young players to get time because of these injuries. And Alphonso Davies broke out in Champions League. He scored that crazy goal against Sporting KC last season. And I think he's got a shot because you look at this game and you say, you know what, we're probably going to sit back and counter. And we're probably going to try and counter through Mane. Alphonso Davies can give you a little bit of that as well. Teixeira gives
Giles Barnes is in this mix too.
I forgot Giles Barnes
is
even on this team.
Yeah, he's not a guy that when I look at him, I don't say, okay, that's a 10-goal score in MLS.
Right.
But he's a guy who can take over games. He'll have three or four games a year where you're like, oh, my God, this Giles Barnes could dominate, have enough of those games.
Are those the three or four games where Andrew Wiebe then comes on ETR and says he's an MVP favorite?
No, I believe when I said that, it wasn't MVP favorite. It was top three player in the league to watch. If I remember correctly, this is when the Giles Barnes train
was
just
pre-Copa America.
I mean, yeah. He was
pre-Gold Cup.
Yeah, I believe so. He was just flying past people, scoring beautiful goals. But that's what I'm saying. He's got it in him.
Yeah.
But this is the ultimate Giles Barnes conundrum, which is he's got it, but he doesn't always show it. So this is an opportunity to do that.
It's a tough spot for Vancouver. We've got the injuries, and then Montero's still going to be new when you get back, and if you can get him into the lineup for that game, I think they have the center backs and they have the holding midfielders to be able to sit back. You've got Jordan Harvey, who's experienced. Shannon Williams is an experienced player, whether he's played with you or not. So you have the experience in the back. I mean, you're probably going to see Andrew Jacobson and Matias Laba start this game.
Which they can protect that back line. If you're gonna counter and break, you could do much worse than those two
so
as kind of shields there.
So then you drop Teixeira in at the attacking midfield role. You put Davies and Mane on the wings. You put Hurtado up top. There's a lot of speed in that team. There's a good defensive base, but it's a tall order for this team. It looks a lot like it did last year. Yep. I know you were missing Mane last year, but this is kind of what the problem was with them. They've made additions, but they're not available. And for Red Bulls, it means that you can't let this opportunity slip.
Nope. Who goes through? Before we get into the two legs, who goes through?
I have to say Red Bulls right now, but I'm not convinced on either side. I mean, you're gonna start Verone and Royer, who I don't know that much about. They've looked good in preseason, but once again, it's preseason. And you're probably going to start Long, which is a test for him.
How do you get Mane isolated with Kolen? How do you draw Salzizo forward and try to flip the field as quickly as possible?
You drop deep and you let them attack you. And that's this is Montreal Impact right here, right? You had Kolen one-on-one with Piatti, and that was the nightmare. And that was something they couldn't deal with. And not only that, but Kolen gets pulled out. So when he has a lot of field to play in, which means lets the other team sitting deep and he has to cover a ton of ground, he gets pulled out. Aaron Long's a good player, but can he cover for Aurelien Kolen like Matt Beisler did? Can he cover for him like Perry Nelwood? I don't know. So that's where you get those question marks. If Davies can beat Lawrence once or twice and get, you know, eliminated defender and get it 3-on-3, I think they have some good chances. But Red Bulls have more stability. There's more of an awareness, I think, of their system that's been successful. So I think for all of those reasons,
they have the best player on the field.
Them.
Right. They have Sacha Kljestan.
They might have the two best players on the field in Wright, Phillips, and Kljestan.
Yeah, no, you're right. Especially attacking proven players. I think that's what gives the Red Bulls the edge here. I do think this is a danger zone spot for the Red Bulls as well. If they drop out of the CCL early in this game against the Vancouver Whitecaps, there's going to be questions immediately based on their offseason.
Which is... Let's take away the off-season part. They struggle in the playoffs. That's the story. They struggle in two-legged affairs. And you say, well, you have to wait till October to know that, right? We're going to be good again in the regular season. But that would be terrible if they lose a two-legged affair before they even start the season.
I hadn't thought about it like that, but you're right.
And on top of now, go back into those what you were about to say, which is
the we know about it, the drama that's been happening, the uncertainty. Maybe drama is not the right word. I don't think Jesse Marsh would agree with
that
word.
Well, you trade your captain. That was drama.
Yeah, and your GM leaves. I mean, who built it? Yeah, there's a little drama there. We'll see what happens, though. 8 p.m. on Wednesday, UDN to watch this one. Thursday, FC Dallas hosting Arabe Unido, another big game. FC Dallas want this thing bad. Fernando Clavijo, you heard Oscar Pereja, in our interview with him earlier this year before the combine, or during the combine, I should say, target this competition. They want this trophy. They think this is an opportunity for them to really show their project on a bigger scale here. But Arabe Unido is a pretty darn good squad, and this is not going to be easy for them. But this is also why they went to Argentina. This is sort of like what the Impact did when they went to Mexico. They wanted to get top-level competition. They wanted to play against teams that would replicate some of what they would see in the competition upcoming. FC Dallas got their supporters shield last year. I don't think they're all that worried about that this year. If it comes, it comes. But CCL and playoffs, to me, those are the two that they're shooting for. I think they got a really good chance here. I think of all the teams in it, I think they have the best chance. I also think it helps that on the other side of their bracket is Pachuca and Saprissa. And I'm not saying Saprissa are – you're not going to roll over Saprissa. They probably won't get through against Pachuca. But I do think if you look at least Tigres, I would much rather go up against Pachuca. I mean, there's not really – it's not like one's easy, one's hard.
Well,
but it's a better route, I think, to the final for FC Dallas.
So I would just like to step up here and say that Arabe Unido is a really good team.
I know they're, and I don't want to discount them. That's kind of why I started there. Like, they still have to get through this.
Right, but they lost two of their best attacking players that got them here, and they beat Monterrey twice. Once on the road, once at home to get to this stage. And Joseph Cox was their starting center forward. He's been transferred to Colombia. Yoel Barcenas, they had on loan from Europe. He's back on loan. So this is what we were talking about with Saprissa as well, which is these off seasons you pass over. So their star number 10, Jose Gonzalez, is back. They've got good experience on the back line. But I don't know that they're as good a team as they were 3 months ago. And that's in favor of FC Dallas because I think FC Dallas is a better team.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. FC Dallas went out in this transfer window. They got Christian Coleman. They got some Anibal Chada. They got some other outside back options that come in here. Hernan Grana, other guys that have really added to the depth and quality of the squad. I think their focus is here, and I think that focus in their preseason regimen, let's say, and I know they got rained out of a couple games in Argentina, but I think what they were able to do there against first team squads, because the Argentine first division is in a little bit of a weird spot right now with TV rights and the season is delayed, so you were playing against big time teams. I think that's going to serve them well here, and I also think Oscar Pereja is the type of coach that understands what it takes to win in these let's be honest, kind of crazy surroundings. Kellen Acosta was saying before this game already that we know they're going to come in. He and Javier Morales, who, by the way, was on one of those MLS teams that went to a CCL final, are saying, we know they're going to come in and they're going to kick us, and we know they're going to slow the game down, and we know this, that, and the other. It's easy to know it. Now, how do you react to it? And I think Javi Mo might be a helpful veteran presence for them.
I think absolutely he will be. They've also, we've said it, but they've brought in South American players. They brought in Central American players, players who kind of understand what they're going up against. They didn't play their first teams in CCL in the group stage.
And Kellen Acosta and the like, you know, the Matt Hedges of the world, the Walkers, those guys aren't rooks anymore when it comes to international competition.
Except that they didn't play them. I mean, Hedges has played, but, like, sure. Kellen Acosta wasn't getting minutes there. Barrios got some time in a few of the games, but, like, they weren't playing full teams, so maybe there's a little bit of a green experience there, but I still think, I mean, what we're going to come back to is FC Dallas a better team right now than they were. I mentioned the losses from Arabe Unido's side, which I think it makes it easier for them defensively. The question is, can they score goals against this team? Coleman, you don't know how quickly he's going to come in, but you have Arruti, and Arruti can score goals for you, and he scored goals in big games, and he scored goals in knockout competitions.
Roland Lama's coming in. We're not sure how he'll react to this sort of environment, of course. They have talent. They have. Right. They should get through. If you're looking at this on paper, FC Dallas should get through. Watch that one on Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on UDN, of course, for both these games and the tournament in general, all the coverage at MLSsoccer.com. Let's move on here. The Tommy Thompson hype wagon, as I said, it's revving right back up because he had that beautiful back heel goal. What do we... When Tommy Thompson does something like this, and go watch the clip if you haven't, he gets the ball back to goal, pulls off a little fancy footwork, and literally backheels it in from like 15 yards out into the corner. I mean, it's viral.
Yeah.
But does it matter? Like,
I don't know. He does these things sometimes, but it's never in an MLS game. So it's like you get excited because he does it for Sacramento Republic, or he does it in a friendly against a European team, or he does it in some sort of other thing, or an all-star setting, or a homegrown setting. So I don't know. Maybe.
Just go watch the clip, and we can all just hope that we see it.
Shout out to Reno, though. Reno, 1868?
I think so, yeah.
6,200 fans at that game for the friendly against San Jose. This is their first year in USL, so if anyone's in that area, you should go check them out. It seems like it's fun. You have written down who else should have a hype train?
Yeah, who else should have a hype train?
So here's my easy list, I think. Obvious
I think Alfonso
list.
Davies is right. Got a clear
Alfonso
hype
Davies,
train.
Yep. Jesus Ferreira, and Derek Etienne Jr. are three simple ones.
Yeah. Well, it depends on your perspective.
I think they're three of the highest-rated attacking talents.
Jesus
in
Ferreira,
MLS
by
academies.
The way, absolutely just destroyed a couple Argentine teams down in down on that tour with FC Dallas. And then this weekend, he had a beautiful free kick goal for the academy team as well.
Yeah,
I mean the kid's got talent.
That's what I'm talking about. Those are three MLS academy kids who are creative and fun to watch and talented. And we're going to meme every offhand thing they do for the next 5 years.
Probably should drink when you hear those names as well. Let us know who should be on the hype train this year, who we're bringing on. Andrew Wenger, we're keeping him off the hype train this year. This year, unless he scores a couple goals to start, then he's right back on the hype train because we got to get him on to talk about books or something. On a similar note.
He gave
note,
me a book recommendation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, what was it?
I don't remember the synopsis, but it's a little intense.
Yeah, as I might expect, as you could perhaps.
So I'm finishing up my book about Marquis de Lafayette, and then I'll head on.
We'll figure out what that is and tweet it out. Some other notes around MLS here. Kevin Molino, the best player in the league, so says Adrian Heath. Any chance that happens?
Maybe. I don't know. No?
No? Probably not. Maybe.
Well, what do you mean by is there any chance that happens?
Is there a plausible MLS universe in which in like – December, when we're wrapping the season up and we're saying, okay, who was the best player this year? If he put up 15 and 12,
would he be the best player in MLS?
I mean, it depends on what Giovinco does. I think Giovanni Dos Santos is going to have a huge year with Alessandrini and Zardes up top. Yeah, Lodero, I think, especially if Clint Dempsey's back. I mean, Nico Lodero could go like, he could go 12 and 20.
He could go 20-20.
He might be able to. Yeah, I mean, if he's hitting in the free kicks and what else.
Yeah.
By the way, Victoria Borg sighting, just walking by the studio here.
Oh, man.
Right after we already have a guest booked.
Yeah.
Victoria Borg in the office in a very fashionable leather jacket, by the way. She definitely goes on the hype train list. For sure.
That's going to drive Simon
Who can
nuts.
Top Giovinco? If Giovinco's healthy, who tops Giovinco? especially with this guy we're about to talk about who Toronto FC just signed.
As of right now, probably no one.
Lodero could.
Yeah.
Piatti could.
Yeah. I mean, and Valeri could, because if he has Blanco next to him and Nagby playing well and Adi healthy.
I think last year you might have said Sasha Kljestan. I think it still could be Sasha Kljestan, but right now there's just some uncertainty on the Red Bulls side. David Villa probably in that conversation as well.
But I can't. I was okay with Villa getting the MVP last year, but that I think is as good a season as Villa can have.
In MLS?
And I think if Giovinco had been healthy, Giovinco would have had it. I think Giovinco's season 2 years ago was better than what Villa did last year, and I think that, like, not.
Arguably, it was better last year, too.
Right.
And total contribution.
Right, and not to, like, knock Villa. I think that's his ceiling, which isn't a ceiling of any sort.
It's like your best league forward MVP, best goal scorer in the league. Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know that he has much room above that. Obviously, Albert Elise will probably win MVP
good
this
chance.
Year.
Very
so that's
good
a hype train.
The odds are high on that one.
You can jump
no
on.
Doubt. Patrick Mullins, maybe, if we're going to, you know, have you drinking your tea or whatever it is you
I mean,
the, car right
the one thing we really don't know is anything in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almiron.
Martinez is scoring a ton of preseason goals, by the way.
So I don't know if if that whole thing melts together like this and hits the ground running, and I didn't even snap my fingers when I said like this, then maybe there.
Yeah, we'll see. Let us know what you think. Who's going to be the best player in MLS this year? Can anybody knock Giovinco off his perch? He'll have help in a former FC Barcelona player, a product of their academy. Victor Vasquez is a 30-year-old central attacking midfielder. Last at Cruz Azul, he won Belgian Player of the Year with Club Bruges in 14-15. He came out of the Barca Academy. He captained their B team. Of course, we've seen a lot of guys come out of that team and be successful in MLS. Oriol Rossell is probably the best example of that. This guy's 30, though. He did get 25 caps for the first team at Barca. At Cruz Azul, had appearances. I didn't really hear much about him in Liga MX. But this is, according to some folks at the club, the central attacking midfielder that they've been looking for, and probably a guy that moves into that spot that Jonathan Osorio has previously occupied, somebody to really pull the final string and also be somebody in the midfield to maintain possession, hold on the ball, get the ball wide in that 5-3-2 formation. We've talked about it for a long time. How much does it change the team? How much does it change their ceiling?
I think it makes it higher. I think one is purely just depth, right? You had that span last season when everyone was hurt and Hamilton and Chapman were running the team at times. And so you just knock everyone a peg back. That
and
just
Doyle
gives
just
you,
cries and cries and cries.
Doyle's not coming back
I know his
now.
Chapman calls are probably falling on deaf ears.
I think it gives you a more experienced player next to Michael Bradley to maybe define Bradley's role a little bit more as the true number eight, which is good for them.
Do you think he's the eight? I think he's the six, right? Cooper's
sorry,
the eight.
Yeah, sorry. The number six.
Yeah, okay.
Cooper kind of roams a little bit. So you need guys around him. He has a Jermaine Jones touch,
too. Yeah, he
does. So you need guys around him who understand what their role is. But it just amazes me that it looks like this team is tapped out. They go out, they get Mavinga, who looks like a starter.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They went out the kind of holes that we had talked about. We weren't so sure about that center back threesome. You know, one of these guys is probably in over his head. You probably don't want Zavaleta and Air Haglund. Yeah, Air Haglund. And so he'll be able to come off the bench. And
Zavaleta soon to be potential El Salvador International.
Yeah, potentially. So we thought those were maybe holes for them, and they go out and get a guy that is a tried and true starter on the left side, and then they go get their 10.
Yeah.
And now they got real depth.
And I don't know that he has to be a number 10 like Valeri, where he dominates the ball, because you have Giovinco and Josie.
Or Lodero, for instance.
Right. But I think it's a guy who's just going to be higher level, that he's able to keep rotating the ball, keep it moving.
Find Giovinco in the right places, essentially.
Positionally sound behind Giovinco and Josie, so they have the freedom to float and not worry about things falling apart behind them. And also, they didn't score in the MLS Cup final.
Right.
So they do recognize the fact that at times they need a little bit more goal scoring in their team.
And if Giovinco's out, he's been hurt some. We know teams like to kick him. Maybe a guy who can help Josie Altidore carry that load. Good stuff there from Toronto FC. Excited to see how that one goes down for them. A TAM signing on that. And if you're wondering how they got that one done, Jerome Thiessen, a Swiss 29-year-old right back, will reportedly sign with Minnesota United. So says Iva Skalarsep. Justin Glad, Jordan Allen, they signed extensions at Real Salt Lake, which is what you want to see. Those young players who are starting to push their way in, and both cases probably starters this year, or at least arguably starters this year.
Justin Glad's definitely a starter. So. Jordan Allen right now, it's his job to lose, I think. Shout out to Jordan Allen, who threw up on Twitter that anyone in the Salt Lake City.
When you said who threw up, I was like, oh, what?
No.
No, okay. Yeah, okay.
He threw up on Twitter, or he posted on Twitter, that if anyone has any volunteer opportunities, good causes in the Salt Lake City area, to let him know throughout the year. So that's good.
That's
head
cool.
on his shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, if you're in the Salt Lake City area and you didn't see that, tweet at Jordan Allen and let him know.
For sure. Patty Mullins signed an extension with DC United today, a guy who came in and was buried in the depth chart at NYCFC and the Revs before that, came in and scored a ton of goals, really changed the face of that franchise.
DC, a weird place because we were really excited about them coming out of the season. Like, you looked at
I'm
that
still
team.
Excited.
But everyone else has made additions. They brought in Ian Harkes, which was very big.
Sebastian Letou, I think, extra depth for them. They got the Costa Rican guy up top.
Yeah, who's, I think, a big, pretty big question mark. But, like,
no, he is.
It felt like coming off the season they were set, and they probably still are. But it just feels like everyone else is making moves, and so they kind of, I guess in classic DC United fashion, just go under the storyline a little bit. And, yeah, I thought they were going to be one of the top two, three teams in the East, I guess. I should still feel that way, is what you're saying?
Look, the East is tough, man. The East is really tough. And we'll talk about that next Monday in the Eastern Conference preview. A lot of people I talk to out there, because we always, fans and media and coaches, it seems to be, oh, the West. The West, the West, the West. And you see kind of these trends, and one conference gets more shine than the other. I think the East right now is under the radar of the better conference. So we'll talk about that, of course, in our previews. Before we get out of here, David Villa slapped AJ De La Garza and got ejected for it. VAR. Yeah. VAR.
The future is now.
I know. Catching slaps all over the field. Look, we're going to go to the break. When we come back, Caleb Porter, the head coach of the Portland Timbers.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe and David Goss. Coming up in just 1 second, Caleb Porter, the head coach of the Portland Timbers. A busy season in the Rose City, Dave. Are you excited? Are they making the playoffs this year? I mean, our predictions officially come next week in the Western Conference preview and the prediction show. But
my prediction is they're going to be a top four team in the league.
In the league, not just the West.
I think when you take the MLS Cup team, you find a defined role for Nagby and Chara with Guzman, and you bring in a DP in Blanco. There's a question mark at center back with them.
That's my next question. What happens at center back?
Yeah, because Lawrence Olam is not a full season MLS starter.
Not for a top four team in the league, he's not.
No, but he can get you to the summer where you have another transfer window to find a player. You also have T2 now, who they've been able to produce some players through them. But I just think, just on the surface, you take a really good team, you add Blanco to them, and I just think it takes you to another level, and I think they have that capability.
We will see what happens with them. We're going to talk about tactics. We'll talk about a lot of things with Caleb Porter. Let's not waste any time. He's on the line now. Caleb, how's it going?
Yeah, going good. We're right in the middle of preseason. Only 2 weeks to go before March 3rd, but things are going well. I'm really enjoying this group.
You said only 2 weeks to go, and that's where I was going to start you. Preseason, how do you feel about it? It's long. You're just waiting for the payoff, which is the first game. Do you like it? Is it fun for you, or is it just something to get through and make sure you accomplish what you need to accomplish before the real fun starts?
Yeah, I enjoy it because I enjoy, you know, being around the team. I enjoy building the layers on the group and putting the pieces together. Honestly, I wish we had more time. It seems like we're cram coaching because you know, you're playing guys probably more minutes than they should be playing at this stage, and you're trying to get, like I said, everything put together, and you got new guys and they're learning you and you're figuring them out. But I do enjoy it. This is my fifth preseason, believe it or not. I remember 5 years ago, you know, my first preseason, and now it's been five, so I feel fortunate to, you know, with be with the same club, and I look forward to the season every year.
What have you learned from those five seasons? I guess what I'm asking is, what is an ideal preseason for you? Yeah, you'd like it to be a little bit longer, but as far as structure, execution, what are you hoping to accomplish in kind of these 1.5 to 2 months that you get these guys? What's like the rhythm and the scheduling like? How do you progress through to make sure on March 3rd you're hitting what you want to hit and the guys are ready to go for that first game?
Yeah, great question. I mean, obviously, the more you go through a season, I think the more you get good at dialing it in. You know, I feel more prepared than ever this year because we had, unfortunately, a too long off season, and so we had a lot of time to just lay things out, prepare, and really reflect on last year, and make tweaks. And we have a lot of new pieces. It's always exciting as a coach when you get new toys, new players in. I think I've learned that's a real important thing to keep in your energy and excitement up is, teaching. I'm a teacher. I always have been a guy that liked to teach the game. And, I think sometimes when you have the same group too long, they get a little bit, tired of hearing you, and maybe you get tired of seeing them sometimes. And so I think it's important to have some new pieces to reteach, and, it makes you a little sharper, your sword a little sharper too. But, back to your question, ideal preseason, I think you have to in the first, I look at it as three cycles. The first 2 weeks, that cycle's mostly just stay healthy. Players are coming in after off seasons. Guys are in at different stages in their fitness. I mean, our guys follow a long off season program, and the hope is to get guys in with a base, a foundation to build on. But, inevitably with new signings or guys that are maybe coming off injuries or just the difference in ages of players, guys come in a lot of different buckets. And so it's important in those first 2 weeks that we don't overdo it. So you build that foundation. And I really use those first couple weeks, that first cycle, to, kind of teach our philosophy. Our style of play, what goes into it, the role clarity, and then, how we want to play as a team in all the phases. So I begin on the first day really teaching some of those things, and I have a kind of a methodology that I follow in those 2 weeks, where I start with attacking, build it up, and then go to defending. And so it's good, even for the guys that have been here. And then the second phase, we start to really play some games, major minutes. I mean, we play a few games and training games in the first phase, but you're only playing guys 30 minutes, 45 minutes. It's really a training session. And you'll focus on different things in those games. But in that second phase, we have our preseason tournament, and you want it to start to look more and more like the game. And you're playing guys 60 to 90 minutes. And now you're really wanting to see how the cohesiveness of your team is coming together, and all the things that you've worked on in training, you want to see them show up in the game. And then the last phase is, you're preparing for that first game where hopefully you're, after 6 weeks, you're as organized tactically, you're as physically ready and sharp as you can be to hopefully get through 3 points. Because in the MLS season, I tell the guys this every year, it usually comes down to the last game, and every point matters. I mean, in the 4 years I've been here, we've made the playoffs 2 years, and the 2 years we missed it by one win, 1 point 1 year and 2 points the other year. So, every game matters and every point adds up, and it's important to get off to a good start.
Caleb, you talked about the group and how it's been around a while, and maybe it's tough at times to get a message through still, or maybe you just need things to change it up, like you said, with new players. Is there anything that you've tried outside the box in this preseason, whether on the field or maybe off the field? We always see around different sports, different activities, motivational speakers, to get through or to maybe change up the mojo or the energy in the team?
Yeah, I think the big thing – again, going into my fifth year, players they want rhythm, and they do want continuity. They don't want everything to be just completely, I call it bipolar, where it's unpredictable. No, nobody wants that. But I've also learned you have to throw some wrenches in. You have to throw some things to just keep them on their toes. And like I said, to continue to make them interested and excited. You know, I read a great excerpt from Pep's book where he said, you know, when he can no longer seduce his players, it's time to go. So you are in some ways continuing to, it's really easy with the new players because they're listening to every word and your way of doing things. And but with the guys that you've had, I think it's important to change your messages. And some of that is delegating more. You know, what I've tried to do is delegate some of the sessions more than ever. And that means when I do come in, whether that's the game day minus two and minus one, the tactical days, now they're ready to listen to me and not tired of listening to me early in the week. So I think part of it's that. But also we did some stuff off the field that was different this year. I've never been a big, you know, team builder off the field because I think sometimes at the pro level, these guys are men, you know, it can be a bit kind of forced and maybe cheesy. So I've tried to let that happen holistically because I do believe, you know, that that's the best way for it to happen, you know, develop that chemistry just themselves in the locker room. But we did do some things off the field just to get them together longer to promote and encourage some of those, you know, bonds to happen. I thought it was good, actually, and funny enough, doing something simple, even for, you know, grown professionals that have been in this a long time, something simple like go-karts, get a little laugh out of the guys, do something different, mix it up. You know, it's amazing how, you know, when they go back to the pitch the next day, you know, there's just a little bit different kind of energy in the group. So we did a few of those things, but I don't think you can force that stuff too much.
Let's talk about the tactical side. And you mentioned kind of building that base and teaching them this way that you want to play. And I know that the term porter ball has not been one that you've liked in the past, so we'll avoid that completely. 2017, what is your tactical vision for this Timbers team? Because another thing about you in the league is that you've been willing to change up a little bit. You've been willing to try new things. What's it going to be in 2017?
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that I really reflected on in this offseason was I have a clear way that I want to put my teams out, and I've kind of at times gone away from that, you know, and I think it's been good that I have, and I think it's important that you do at the professional level. You have to be adaptable, and I think there are real challenges in playing the exact same way every single game, you know, for different reasons, because, you know, when you look at the parity in the league, because you're always, in terms of executing the way you want to play, it always comes down to your personnel, it comes down to the opponent's personnel, and it comes down to the conditions. And I think in MLS, when you look at your personnel versus the opponent's personnel, a lot of times it's pretty equal. And so while you might want to play a certain way, the opponent might be wanting to play this exact same way. And so you see sometimes a little bit more, you know, open games because both teams are trying to attack. And, you know, and then with the conditions, you know, having to travel, compacted windows, you know, because of the travel, because of the heat, altitude, and compacted windows, you get more injuries. And so, you know, the example I always use is I may want to be a pressing team, but if I go in July to Houston and it's 105 degrees, is it realistic for me to be a pressing team that day? That might be somewhat naive. And so I've adapted sometimes in those situations. I may want to be a possession team, but if Liam Ridgewell is out of the lineup, which he was for 12 games last year, and he's our best player on the ball out of the back, then maybe it's difficult for me to be a possession team now when I'm going to the depth chart, and instead of playing a player that's been in the Premier League, I'm playing a guy that's, you know, on a lot less money and been, you know, a league veteran. It's just not quite as good on the ball. And so, again, trying to play out of back and be a possession team when you don't have a player to execute it, or if, let's say, you're on the road playing New York Red Bull and they're pressing you, I think you have to adapt. But in some cases, I think I've adapted a bit too much. But I also think it's made me a better coach. It's made me a more well-rounded coach. And it's made me a coach that can take any team and figure out ways to win. But going into this year, I wanted to get back to playing in the way I prefer. And ideally, that's a more consistent way, home and away. It's a more consistent way, game in and game out. And it's more of a proactive way where we're deciding the game with possession and pressure. I've always believed that if you play that way, you know, in a more dominant way where you're dictating or deciding the game, you increase your chances of winning. And I will still have some flexibility, hopefully, within the team. But I wanted to get back to doing that. But it starts again with the players. You have to have the players to execute that. But it helps when you get a David Guzman who can be a six and really good on the ball. It helps when you get a Blanco who's a really smart technical player that can come inside. He'll work hard and press, and he'll also help us keep the ball and produce goals. And then it helps if you have depth. So now if we lose guys to injuries and I have to go to the number two guy in the depth chart, I wanted guys that could continue to help me execute that way of playing. That was a goal. And I thought last year when we had injuries, we had a real drop off in the bench, and it meant that oftentimes I was just trying to band-aid the game to win the game and, you know, play in a more reactionary way. And it wasn't really what I believed in, to be honest with you.
We're going to talk more about the Timbers specifically, but one second with the league wide, because you're talking about the way the league is and the way different teams have to adapt. And we're wondering if, when you look at MLS, is there an identity or a profile, like when fans or when coaches talk about Serie A or Liga MX or La Liga, there's a few phrases that are said about the way the game is played there, the way the game's coached, the way teams are set up. If you're talking to, let's say, a coach from South America or Europe, and they ask you about an MLS identity, what would you say?
Yeah, great question. I think there's a lot of different identities because there's a lot of different, you know, coaches, the way, and each coach, I think, looks at the game somewhat differently when I look around the league. But I think there's some common threads, with teams, at least teams that win. And I've thought about this a lot, which has somewhat changed how I look at how I put my teams together. Even though I still want to decide the game, I think you always have to have certain things in your team in MLS to win. And one of those things is athleticism. You know, we're a very athletic league. The good teams are. When you look at, you know, for me recently, the best example is FC Dallas. They're always very athletic, good team speed. And so that's, I think that you have to have athletic players, in your team to win an MLS. The second thing is I think teams are very effective on set pieces. Teams are very vulnerable if they're not big enough on set pieces. So if you don't have enough size in your team, you're gonna get punished. And again, I'll go back to FC Dallas. They're always good on set pieces. And the third thing I think is the ability to play in transition. You have to be able to open teams up in transition. Now, whether that's pressing high and then countering the goal, whether that's, you know, in some cases, when you look at, again, at Dallas, they don't always have the most possession, but they will open you up if you have the ball in transition. When you look at, teams that are effective, like, let's say, a Red Bull, they're very good in transition. They play quick all the time. So they play with a really high speed of play and tempo. KC's the same. They'll press you, turn you over, go to goal. So kind of that counter-pressing approach. So I think those are think trademarks of our league is athleticism, set pieces, and transition. And funny enough, when you look around the world, You know, look at the Premier League, you look at the Bundesliga leagues, most of the top leagues, it's the same. Those things are very important. The focus on having, you know, 60-70% possession has kind of been lost. When you look at, you know, a team like Chelsea is another good example. You know, they're very organized. They will press you, especially after they've had the ball, try to turn you over and go quick, but they're okay not having the ball. You know, very few teams around the world really, going back to my initial point, can play the exact same way every single game. You know, you've got the Bayerns of the world, the Barcelonas of the world, because they have the most talent. But I think there are good examples in MLS of teams that, you know, have tried to not be adaptable. And, you know, I think the best example recently of a team that's done that is New York, and they've been the most effective in recent years at executing that. But there are other examples of teams that have tried to do that and really struggled, you know, year after year, because you become predictable.
When you look at these teams around the league, we came out of last segment talking about CCL. No MLS team has ever won CCL. Is there anything that frustrates you when you look around MLS? Any flaws across the board, or is there a reason that we could look at tactically why there hasn't been the success maybe we wanted in CCL?
I think a lot of it's the roster turnover. You know, when you look at the past format, you almost had to have a good roster 3 years in a row to win it. And you know, you think about what would happen to, you know, Montreal was the closest recently if they had Drogba. So I think a lot of it's a roster turnover. That's, for me, the most frustrating thing about this league is the flexibility and you know, keeping the amount of continuity you want, but turning over, you know, the ones you want. A lot of times it just feels like you're handicapped a little bit in that regard. You know, I think a good example is when we win the league, we lose a Jorge Villafana, a Maxi Rudy, a Paparato, you know, George Fashive, Rodney Wallace, some of these key guys. We had to, you know, and you know, and then last year we have to go to our bench, which was mostly new guys, and you know, you just saw the drop off and when we went to the bench, and I think that's the toughest part and probably why you don't see teams with clear identities as much as you wished. But I think that would help, having a consistent roster. Also just the setup of it. I think obviously there's going to be changes made that I think will give us a better chance. But when you look at these Champions League games being played here in the next several days, you know, I'm worried about March 3rd, have enough time. These guys are playing arguably the most important games of the year with only 4.5 weeks versus teams that are, you know, mid-season form. So I think that's the biggest challenge.
How has TAM changed some of those challenges, Caleb? Because we've seen kind of this influx of money, especially at the top end. And, you know, we're talking about Toronto FC today, and they make a signing, a central attacking midfielder out of Liga MX. And we've been talking about that hole for them for a while. Look at your roster. You mentioned a lot of these guys that have come in. You've added a lot of talent at the top end. How has TAM changed your roster, MLS rosters, the quality of play? When you look at the construction there, do you think that'll help teams keep good teams, good rosters together for longer?
Absolutely. I mean, I think eventually, you know, the league has to move in a direction where, you know, there's no cap. And the more flexibility to get better players, to manage your roster and cap, the better. You know, our general manager, Gavin Wilkinson, does a great job at squeezing out as much as possible, you know, in the cap. And so with the TAM money, it just gives you more money to work with and use. And, you know, in our case, we used it on some players that, you know, like a Darlington Nagbe, Liam Ridgewell, allows us to buy down certain guys and keep them. You know, other teams are using it to buy new players. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we didn't make the playoffs by, like I said, 2 points, but we got a lot better this offseason, you know, in some ways because of that. And you see it every year, which is why in MLS, what's up is down, what's down is up. You never know from year to year. You know, Colorado's a good example. They were one of the worst teams in the league for 2 years, and then they were one of the best. So you just kind of never know. The teams at the bottom come up. The teams at the top, you know, get a little more watered down. And I think the better players we can get, the more the rosters can stay consistent, the better organization teams will have tactically, because, like I said, that chemistry's there, the understanding's there. And the best teams in this league are the ones that kind of stick together with a core and then sprinkle in new players to, you know, help keep that hunger in the team.
2017, an exciting year in MLS. Going to see a lot of these new players. Sebastian Blanco is a guy on your team that, of course, we're very, very excited for. Take us up a level, though, Caleb, because not everybody can have your job. Not everybody can have your background. I'm a fan watching the game. I'm watching the Timbers play. What should I be watching for? If I want to learn more about the tactical side of MLS and just soccer in general, when I watch a game, how should I watch it? What should I be looking for?
I think you should look for, you know, all the phases. You know, a lot of people, they don't appreciate every phase of the game. A well-organized team is a team that's comfortable in every phase, and going back to being flexible. I always had the best players in college. You know, I worked my ass off recruiting, and I tried to get, you know, the best players. And because of that, I was able to pretty much focus on, you know, what I would call is the front half phase, where it's literally possession and pressure, and you're deciding the game with the ball, looking to circulate the ball, break a team down in the final third. And, you know, my challenge every week at that level was figuring out how to pick the lock, figuring out how to break teams down, because that's really how I would solve winning the game, and then then manage the counter. I never, ever put my team out for 7 years to defend deep, to be comfortable in that phase, and then play in transition, force the opponent to open up space. And so I think when you watch a game, a real, you know, nuanced tactical game with two good teams, you know, what I've learned is you have to be comfortable sometimes not having the ball, whether you want to do it or not, the game's going to go that way. And that's one of the things I've been most proud of is, you know, we're going to always have a clear system and understanding in that system. We'll always have a, you know, hopefully an identity that's clear to see, where we do press, we do have the ball. But you'll see in some games that that's not working out, we're still pretty comfortable in that back half phase. And I train for that. You know, I prepare the group for that plan B always. And in some cases, maybe the plan B is the plan A. But I want to be a team that has the ball in the front half more this year, because we have the team to do it. We have the players to do it. We have the depth to do it. And that's what I prefer. But I think look at those phases, you know, and there's some beauty in teams that know who they are. Montreal's a great example. They know who they were. They were bought into that way of playing. There's no right or wrong for me in the game, you know, but the right or wrong comes in to the coach's vision and how he gets the players to execute that way of playing. And if it doesn't matter if you're front half or back half, if the players execute and if they look comfortable and organized and effective, for me, that's the beauty of coaching, is seeing that, seeing the players execute no matter how, you know, no matter how the game goes, they look comfortable.
How do you teach that? Because you were talking about kind of those first 2 weeks, and you're inoculating people and players and essentially your whole staff in the way of doing things. And I'm thinking about some of the things I hear from the academy and on the player development side, and people saying, hey, technically, physically, we're there. Tactically, maybe a little bit naive. Would you agree with that assessment of kind of that naivete among young players in the U.S. and Canada systems? And then how do we fix that? How do we teach tactics? How do we get players accustomed to all these different phases and comfortable in all these different phases? How do you do it?
Yeah, great question. I used to always have a hard time when I'd get guys from the U-17 national team. They've been the best players always. They've never struggled. They had never suffered. They've been the starting lineup every single week. They've usually been playing in games where it's not tight. It's not fast. They're not under pressure. And, you know, if you ask players like that, you know, I used to say this to my assistants, if we walked in today and I said, listen, we're going to drop off and our line of confrontation is going to be at midfield, they would immediately think that I don't believe in them and they don't have confidence in them and that, you know, we're the inferior opponent just by that message. And I think that's absolutely wrong because in other countries, good tactical, you know, soccer, football is, you know, sometimes you draw your lines in different positions and it's all based on staying in control and being effective in coming up with a game plan to win the game, factoring in your team and the opponent. And there's nothing wrong with conceding possession. You know, there's this kind of, you know, illusion, I think, with American kids sometimes that you have to have the ball and that you have to, you know, press all the time. And so, you know, the only way they get comfortable doing that is actually, you know, training in those phases and training in the relevant space. And that's what I try to do. I try to make training as realistic as possible. I try to get guys in their positions as much as possible. And I try to get them in their relevant space as much as possible. And the more I'm in this, the more I go away from the gimmicky training sessions. And I just try to do my teaching in real game situations. And you may do a small group where it's your back five or six versus your front, you know, five or six. So that could be a small group. You know, attack versus defense training session. But, you know, don't do anything that doesn't look like the game. And I think that's the big thing. We have a country of strikers who don't know how to play with a back to goal. They don't know how to finish on the end of a cross. They're not trained how to, you know, move and play on the shoulders. They're not functionally trained. You know, we have center backs that can't head. And again, I think it goes back to not enough functional training. And what I mean by functional is position, relevant space, and whether it's in the unit, you know, your line of four, or, you know, front four, or your channel, left channel, right channel. But it has to look like the game. And I don't think coaches in this country train functionally enough.
A fascinating conversation here with Caleb Porter. We know you've taken a lot of your time here, Caleb. You've got a game to get ready for on March 3rd against Minnesota United FC. But before we let you go, last question for you. 2017 and beyond, I know you're a thinker. I know you're thinking about this stuff, your personal development, where you want to go, both as a coach and maybe professionally. Where do you see things right now as you look at your career?
Well, yeah, I think good question. I think, believe it or not, I'm pretty realistic, you know, and I need to get better. I need to keep, you know, grinding at the professional level. I need to keep, like I said, sharpening my sword and getting better and figuring out the perfect way to put together a season and to win an MLS. And I'm not happy about the fact that I've made the playoffs twice and missed it by a point and 2 points twice, you know. So for me, I want to keep, you know, winning trophies here at Portland and winning games here with this club and in Major League Soccer and continuing to get better. I just turned 42 yesterday, so or 2 days ago. So, you know, I'm still a young coach. I have a long way to go, and I'm very motivated to do this for a long time and continue practicing my craft and getting better. So I'm not really looking at what that next job is. I just want to, you know, win the next game and have a good season.
There you go. The
ETR would like to officially wish you happy birthday.
Yeah, we didn't know that. We might have jumped on there. What was the – did you get something on the present side? Are you too old for that at 42 now? Or are the kids hooking you up? What's the team even, the staff?
I have three young kids and eight-year-old, six-year-old, and a five-year-old. So they surprised me. We had a rare day off in preseason. So we went up to the mountain, and I downhill skied for the first time in 21 years.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't pretty. I used to ski a lot when I was younger, but it was actually pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
There you have it. He's still on 2 feet. That's a good sign. The first game for the Timbers, March 3rd, the opener for MLS as well, 9:30 p.m., FS1, at home, a big crowd expected, a sellout crowd expected, as always, for the Timbers against Minnesota United FC. Caleb, maybe the best gift, 3 points, ultimately a playoff berth, maybe another MLS Cup. We thank you for your time, Coach.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Good stuff there from Caleb Porter. We hope you enjoyed
great stuff.
It. Oh, yeah. We know he likes to talk soccer, so that's why we said, you know, if we're going to talk tactics, it might as well be with Caleb Porter. Good thing for him, he's still on 2 feet. Like I said, those first downhill skiing after 21 years can get a little bit iffy. The equipment's changed a lot in that time, but trying to win a championship in Portland, trying to get back to the playoffs, you could hear kind of his frustration there. 2 for 4, I don't think, is a percentage that Caleb Porter likes too much.
No, and it's just odd because it's the one of two then is an MLS Cup.
Right.
Which is as good as you
can. And the other one was
get.
Close. I mean,
it was
they made a big
Western
run
Conference
yeah.
final, yeah. Although they lost to Seattle on that one, which I'm sure he remembers. But we talked to him, I think it was 2 seasons ago, but you hear his development mentally, and just he constantly is talking about what he needs to get better at, what he can get better at. And
a lot of reflection for him, day to day, week to week, year to year, month to month.
I think last time we talked to him a while back, he said, I need to be more flexible. And you saw last year that they were maybe a little bit too flexible.
Right.
And now he's saying the other way around that I need to know what my team's identity is, have them be skilled that in the game they can react and do what they have to do for stretches of the game. But in the end, have an identity that we're built on that we want to be. And dominant talent, like he said in college,
yeah, that's key.
Allows you to play the way you want to play. Sebastian Blanco and Guzman should allow him to do that now.
It's going to be interesting. We'll see how they do on March 3rd against Minnesota United. Any questions, comments, you know how to get at us. At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. One small note, don't stop believing. You know who chose that song?
He did.
Caleb Porter. That was the song they celebrated MLS Cup to. Hoping another one of those come back around.
So he says MLS Cup, and he said his one complaint was roster turnover. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Tam, and that's something that's added since his team won the title. And I don't think that Toronto and Seattle have turned over as much from last year as his Portland team and Columbus had to do 2 years ago.
If anything, like we talked about in the first seg, Toronto's improved.
So, and as a Seattle, they got Dempsey back.
Yeah.
So I think that is really promising for the league. When hearing
Will
him Bruin talk about
and Harrison Shipp and some of these other guys.
Harrison Shipp.
Harrison. I don't know. Timbers fans are tweeting at me this weekend, so they are not a big fan of me for various reasons. One of the reasons, names. Harrison Shipp, I would guess, is
Timbers fans specifically are very big on pronunciations.
Yeah, they're not big on Andrew Wiebe either.
Yeah.
Wiebe, however you want to say it.
Nice.
You know, whatever you want to do.
We should bring you out there, throw you in tar and feather you out there.
Hey, I'm down. I'll do it. I'll have fun.
But you'll get
it.
Some craft beers along the
way. That's true, and that's always worth it. Maybe some voodoo donuts as well. Let's go to the mailbag. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, hanging out with David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. We're into the mailbag, and let's start with Minnesota because I spent the weekend there hanging out with the Dark Clouds, hanging out with the True North Elite, hanging out with the American Outlaws, with a bunch of loons, just a bunch of loons, not in like a crazy way, but in a Minnesota United way. It was a lot of fun. I got a story coming on it next week, kind of going over the culture there and what makes the market really special. One of the things that make it special are, as I said, the fans. And I met a bunch of them, a bunch of ETR listeners. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming up and saying hi. I always enjoy meeting you and talking to you about the game. A special shout out, though, to one fan in particular. That is Oscar Gonzalez, well, two fans, and his son, Logan. Logan is a big fan of the show, 5 years old. I mean, that's how we want to start him. Young, get him that CCL fever immediately. And then it's like, I don't know.
What position is Logan?
I don't know. That's a good question. He has to hit us up. We're going to send him a signed ball from the guys. Oscar tried to hand me a jersey that he'd bought at the event and have it and sign it. And I said to him, there is absolutely no way I'm besmirching your jersey.
Well, you would decrease the value immediately by a lot.
Now it's just a rag.
Yeah.
It's just for cleaning up messes had I done that. But shout out to Logan. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoy your first year out there in Minnesota. It should be a fun one. Of course, they are part of the first game on March 3rd in Portland against the Timbers. Any questions about that Caleb Porter interview? You know how to hit us up. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Let's jump into the mail. What do we got here?
Scott Dickey, and he emails in and he says, after listening to your interview with Steve Bernasconi, I thought it'd be awesome if my family could host him at some point along his journey. We live at basically the halfway point between Dallas and Atlanta in the Jackson-Brandon, Mississippi area, home of Marlon Harrison and Justin Mapp.
Yeah, I was going to say, a little talent coming out of there.
Hashtag represent. Yeah. So he fired off an email to watch a game together and stay with him. Steve accepted.
Marcus Epps, I believe, is also a Jackson, Mississippi guy who signed with a union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is that Scott didn't ask his wife.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So he's got Steve coming, and he hasn't figured out a way to ask her yet. So he says, sincerely, your loyal ETR listener, potential doghouse occupant. He's looking for a little bit of advice.
So maybe, just maybe, she's listening to this right now. And if you
want to breaking it
yeah,
to her.
If you want to follow Steve, go back and listen to that episode, that special we put out last week. 8 months, 35-plus games. I mean, he's basically living our
he's
bucket list
MLS,
for us.
He's doing MLS, USL, NASL, NWSL,
Gold
NPSL, Cup. Gold Cup, probably some friendlies in there too.
Oh, man, he's doing everything.
Yeah.
Look, at the soccer tour is the way to follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, you see, you're avoiding
answers.
I know,
I'm struggling
Scott
here. What this sell is. I think it's it's a cultural exchange. He's coming by to tell you stories. It's a new friend. It's he's gonna be in the corner, and you're not gonna see him or hear him. I don't know.
I think you got to go, I don't have much advice except for you got to give her something in exchange. It's a trade.
Yeah.
And that is how relationships are strong.
There you go.
Trade-offs.
Yeah, figure out what she wants. Tell her that you're going to do that and then be like, oh, by the way, how do you think about this?
Yeah.
You think it would be okay? Steve's already committed. He needs to come. So if you want to help Steve, go check out his website.
What I would say is do it well in advance.
Yes.
Do not wait on
him.
That won't make it better.
No, do not wait. Okay, what else we got?
We put out a question, you did, about people.
Yeah, I put a lot of questions out.
Having soccer experiences overseas, connecting with people, and we got a lot of really great stories. But one that I want to mention is an email from Tom Thresher, who's a New York Red Bulls fan. Hopefully, maybe we'll see him at the game tomorrow. And he said, in 2013, I was serving as an advisor in the Army. I found myself in Paktika, Afghanistan, sitting in a shura, a meeting with some village elders discussing property disputes and trying to convince them not to shoot at my friends as we walked through town. The tension was high. Talks turned to screaming matches, and it appeared my Afghan brothers and I would leave the meeting unaccomplished. In the midst of the meeting, a little boy walked in wearing a knockoff Man U jersey with Messi inscribed on the back. I chuckled at the typo, asked the boy's father about it. The boy loved the fact that I even knew who Man U was and didn't care that the name on the back wasn't actually a player for the Rebs. I grabbed a deflated ball out of my ruck with the name PFC Nick Madaris written on it, inflated it, and handed it to the boy. His father was elated. Our conversation changed completely. We talked about the Prem for the next 25 minutes through our interpreters, and although we didn't conclude our business that day, our relationship was much better for the rest of my time in the country. The name PFC Nick Madaris is the name of my best friend who was killed in Iraq in 2006. I explained this to the young man before I left, and he told me he'd pray for me and thank God for my friend's sacrifice. My story is one of over 50,000 like it from the Kick for Nick Foundation. I encourage all soccer fans to check out the beautiful game transcends all cultures and is, in my experience, the universal language. I went on to Kick for Nick Foundation, N-I-K. I don't know how else you'd spell Nick. And you can donate equipment to them. They've donated balls throughout South America, Central America, Middle East, Africa, other parts of the world. It looks like a really cool organization, and that's a great story.
Yeah, look, the ball is a universal language. You don't need to be able to communicate other than, I've got a ball, we can kick the ball. It really goes quickly from there, and it's a great way to connect. That's an amazing story. I'm not sure that we can do justice talking about it. Go check it out. Know that you can connect with people immediately through the game of soccer, and that's one of the things that makes it special. Good luck out there, Tom Thresher. Thank you so much for your email. I think that's all we got here. Let's get out of here. We will see you later this week. We'll talk to fans. Remember, hit us up. if you've got somebody that we should highlight, or if you just have a thought on where MLS supporter culture is in 2017. At Extreme Radio, ExtremeMLSsoccer.com. Big thanks to Caleb Porter for joining us. Thanks to you, Dave, for being here as well. We'll see you on Thursday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio. We'll be right back.